If your business needs a new application, then developers will have to write code, a lot of code. If an application needs to be modernized, then you'll need time, resources, and caffeine. If that sounds daunting, then you need Watson X Code Assistant, AI designed to multiply developer productivity so you can generate code quickly. Let's create a more modern foundation for business with Watson X Code Assistant. Learn more at ibm.com/codeassistant. IBM, let's create.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Homes.com knows having the right agent can make or break your home search. That's why they provide home shoppers with an agent directory that gives you a detailed look at each agent's experience, like the number of closed sales in a specific neighborhood, average price range, and more. It lets you easily connect with all the agents in the area you're searching, so you can find the right agent with the right experience and ultimately the right home for you. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Faith can be scary. Faith for me is very foundational. Faith is the evidence of things unseen. But in light of the name of this podcast, The Road to Somewhere, I'm going to tell you the best description of faith. Faith is taking that first step when you can't see the rest of the staircase. Sometimes you can't even see the step that you're on, and it feels like you're on a road to nowhere.
Thanks for joining us on this Road to Somewhere, where we talk about exploration, adventure, major life changes, and transformation. It's about not necessarily knowing where we're going, but having faith that the journey will be worthwhile. I'm Lisa Oz.
And I'm Jill Herzig. And, you know, one of the things that has not come up a lot in this podcast is faith, is religious faith, spiritual.
That's because of you, Jill.
Because I'm a heathen. I'm a complete heathen. I wander in the desert of non-belief. Tell me about you.
No, I interrupted you. I had to make a joke, but please go on.
No, that's full stop. That's the story. And through all my transformations, I've definitely had moments where I thought, now, why could we not have been just a little more Jewish?
We had the rabbi. I don't think we've had a minister on.
All right, that's true. But, I mean, we were Jewish only in food choices, which we reveled in, but and still revel in, but no, not much faith.
Oh, you mean we, your family, not you and I.
Yes, not you and I. My family. Why could they not have raised me with just a little bit more of a backbone of faith? But you were raised with a backbone of faith.
Yeah,
and still have that.
And probably had more Seder dinners than you did.
No doubt.
Faith has always played a really huge part in my life. I went to religious school. You know, you can't avoid it.
Yeah.
Chapel every morning, religion class 3 days a week. It was huge.
But that can't be why it plays such a big role in your life.
I don't know. I think it's part of my DNA at this point. But and I don't go to church that much anymore. Mm. So I would say I'm religious, but I'm not a good institutional follower. Let's put it that way.
And in times of change, do you go there?
To church?
No. Well,
no.
Well, yes. Either go to church physically or just turn to your faith for a sense of true north.
Absolutely turn to my faith for a sense of true north, not necessarily go to my church. But we have somebody here today who actually can help us both navigate that space, because I'm definitely excited about this road goes, and you're seems like spiritually curious.
I am so interested in it. And so, I mean, honestly, this podcast has just flung open so many doors and shutters for me.
Paula Ferris is an Emmy Award-winning journalist, the senior national correspondent at ABC News, host of the podcast Journeys of Faith with Paula Ferris, and she is the author of a new book called Out, Why I Traded Two Dream Jobs for a Life of True Calling. Paula, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you, and I think I'd prefer just to listen to the two of you riff. This conversation was very interesting. Loved hearing about your background and you're kind of curious when it comes to faith. And I did not know that about you, Lisa, that you went to chapel every day and that faith was such an important part of your life.
See, we're just...
You guys are full of surprises. It's like I opened that little, surprise box at the dentist.
And we're constantly sort of surprising one another too, which is fun.
But that's kind of why we're doing this, is so that we can learn and grow and learn from each other and learn from our guests. And,
right.
And it's really exciting. And it's kind of what you do too with your podcast, right?
Yes. I started doing my podcast, Journeys of Faith, about a year and a half, 2 years ago. And I know faith's very important to me. And I know that it's so important to newsmakers and influencers out there and the people that we're interviewing every day in the news media. But unfortunately, we don't give those folks an opportunity from a mainstream platform to talk about their faith. So that's really because of my deep faith, and also coupled with the fact that we don't give them the mic to talk about their Muslim faith or their Buddhist faith or their Christian faith or their Jewish faith or their Sikh faith. I thought, what a great opportunity to see these people in a different light, to peel back the layers and to find out how their faith really informs their decisions and how it gets them through the ups and downs of life. It's been really fascinating. We're on season three, and it's been eye-opening and just a really great journey.
So tell us a little bit about, I do want to go backwards in time and sort of find out what led you to the podcast.
But sure, of course.
Since we're talking about it, what's been the most surprising takeaway for you from those guests? Because you've really got a diverse set of voices there.
Yeah, that's the thing. I talk to people of many different faiths. And this particular season, season three, we're talking to politicians. So some of the 2020 candidates, so we're talking to Democrats and Republicans. I've just been fascinated. I want to encourage everyone to come to the table. I think we're in a moment where we're so scared to have these conversations, these much needed conversations. And the reason we're not having these conversations is because we don't show up as our true self at work or at play. So I took the onus. I want to show up as my true self every day to work, as a Christian, as somebody who's going to love God and love people, and I want people to see that in me. And I want to encourage my Jewish friends and my Muslim friends to do the same. And guess what? The moment we do that, we start having really provocative conversations about your cultures and your traditions and things that are really important to you. And then we start breaking down walls and barriers. I think there's pervasive ignorance in our society today and in our culture. We aren't taking the time to learn about one another's religions and their cultures and their traditions. The moment we start having those conversations, that's the moment we start having change and breakthrough and breaking down those walls that we need to.
What do you do with someone like Jill, for example, who doesn't have any faith tradition?
Now, my dear friend Dan Harris, who he and I co-anchored Good Morning America weekends for years together.
He shows up in your book in a wonderful way.
And he would describe himself as an agnostic Buddhist, but he also was raised Jewish. Mm-hmm. I would say probably more kind of not culturally Jewish, but more like religious Jewish, but that was just one parent. So how would you describe yourself?
Well, I think both of my parents... actually, my mother was Episcopalian and was raised as a church-going person. She married my father, who is Jewish.
Did she convert?
No, she did not. She was not particularly religious. She would have described herself as an atheist. Okay. Her parents were treated as if some sort of tragic thing had happened in their family. And literally, I think the last day they went to church was when the minister came up to them and said, "I'm so sorry for the tragedy in your family." Mm. And my grandmother clutched her breast and said, "Oh, what are you talking about? Is something, what happened? What, is someone ill?" And he said, "No, your daughter is marrying a Jew." Mm. And they walked out and never really walked back in. Mm-hmm. So that, I think there was something, if there were any threads of faith in my parents—
they were broken at that time when they got married.
Right.
So we were raised to, yes, we went to Seder at my grandmother's. It was all about the food, as I said. You know, culturally Jewish, but not really anything. Mm-hmm. So it's, I would say that it's, I'm a person who is curious but feels a void. And, you know, I'm sort of searching for a comfortable place to sit in belief in something.
Do you, I'm so, not sure what so it you is. Said a comfortable place. Do you feel uncomfortable? I feel like are we in group therapy right
yeah,
now?
Yeah, definitely. Do you like playing the role of therapist?
Do you feel uncomfortable right now?
No.
Because I've talked to Sam Harris. No. Sam Harris is one of the four horsemen of atheism. So yeah. I like to have these provocative conversations
yeah.
and just,
yeah.
it's not an accusation, it's just yeah. inquisition. We're having great conversations. So are you uncomfortable? You said you're looking for a comfortable place.
No. I'm, okay. When I say I'm looking for a comfortable place, I think what I mean is a place where I know that I've found something that satisfies me, mm-hmm. that feels true to me, but it might not be a place where I feel sure of anything.
Right.
So being comfortable being unsure and just sitting in that liminal space between believing something and believing nothing.
Yeah, and I'm very sure in my faith, but again, it is faith, and faith is the evidence of things unseen. We can't prove every single thing. But faith is, like Martin Luther King Jr. said, you know, taking that first step when you can't see the rest of the staircase. There's always an element of faith in everything that you believe. You know, you believe that the sun's going to come up tomorrow at the same time. You have faith that it's going to. Why? Because of the patterns and the rhythms. So we exercise faith on a daily basis in a multitude of things. I'm very sure of my faith. It's, you know, when my father was dying, one of my last words to him was, I love you forever and I'll see you again. I have confidence in that. But yes, there are things that are hard for me to describe and hard for me to explain about God. And my brother-in-law, who was an atheist and he converted actually when he was a medical student, you know, he had an epiphany. But I love to have really thought-provoking conversations about him. And he said, if I could explain everything about God, then God would be too small. Mm. And that's why God is God and we are not. You know, we are finite and we are mortal and we are looking through a glass dimly and then we'll see face to face. You know, there are so many analogies in the Bible, you know, to God, a day is 1,000 years and 1,000 years is a day. And, you know, so I go back to that. There's a lot of things I can't explain, but for those things that are unexplainable, like, why does God allow suffering? You know, why tragedy? I don't have all of the answers, but I know, the promises I cling to, I know that we're not promised a pain-free life because this isn't the end game. I know the last piece on the puzzle and I'm confident, or the last piece on the chessboard and I'm confident of that. But there definitely are a lot of questions and I think it's important to dig into your belief system and try to answer some of those questions outside of, this is how I was raised. And I was raised in a very religious household, but it took a long time for me to really not just come to grips, but make that faith my own so that it was something that I leaned on heavily.
When we come back, we're going to dig into some more questions, but we're going to shift gears maybe to the secular and talk about
Love
your
it.
Career a little bit.
What if AI could help your business deliver mission-critical outcomes with speed? With IBM Consulting, your business can design, build, and scale trusted AI using Watson X and modernize the way you work to accelerate real impact. Let's create AI that transforms your business. Learn more at ibm.com/consulting. IBM. Let's create.
Your new home journey starts at Fisher Homes, where everything is red, white, and new. Explore exclusive summer savings and start your journey by selecting your ideal home site and your dream community. Choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans and bring your style to life at the Lifestyle Design Center. Are you looking for a quick move-in ready home instead? Fisher Homes has options for those, too. Fill out a form to connect with a new home advisor at fisherhomes.com to get started today before the sun sets on summer savings.
Hi, I'm Cindy Crawford, and I'm the founder of Meaningful Beauty. Well, I don't know about you, but like I never liked being told, oh, wow, you look so good for your age. Like, why even bother saying that? Why don't you just say you look great at any age, every age? That's what Meaningful Beauty is all about. We create products that make you feel confident in your skin at the age you are now.
Meaningful Beauty. Beautiful skin at every age. Learn more at meaningfulbeauty.com.
Before the break, we were chatting with Paula Ferris about her faith, and I wanted to ask about, well, Paula's new book is all about how she left her really powerful jobs to pursue a life that was more authentic in her faith. But I want to talk about those really powerful jobs and exactly what happened for a second. So
yep.
Can you tell us a little bit about that?
So, you know, I am a broadcaster and I worked my butt off. I worked in small markets in Dayton and Cincinnati and then Chicago. And then my husband and I, we had two little kids when we were in Chicago when we got a call to come to the network, to come to ABC. And as a broadcaster, that's the pinnacle. You can work at local affiliates, you can work in your St. Louis affiliate, you can work in your Cincinnati affiliate. But when you get called to work for the network, which is the network is seen on every single television throughout the country, I mean, that's a huge opportunity. So 8.5 years ago, almost 9 years ago, we packed up everything that we knew and loved. We're Midwest kids. I'm from Michigan. He's from Indiana. We met in school, in college, in Ohio. We're college sweethearts. We'll be married 20 years this year.
Congratulations.
Thank you. I appreciate it. And so we moved out here. We didn't know anyone and had this great opportunity to work for the network. I started working overnights. I didn't even know that ABC had an overnight show. I was like, wait, what? It was called World News Now. And I did that for a year. And it was a great way just to get my sea legs in news and kind of get acclimated to working for the network. And then I got promoted after a year just to be a general correspondent and then GMA Weekend and then The View. So things were just really like moving fast.
But the network kept piling things on top of you without necessarily taking
anything away. Right. Well, that was my own doing too. And a lot of that was my own doing when I was doing GMA Weekend. And then they asked me to do The View. I said, how's this going to work? And they said, well, we'll try to get you a day off every week. And I had three little kids at the time. And that was, you know, I go back to that moment, and that was probably something I describe myself as a woman of faith. And I think people knew that about me, but I was so consumed with my career and I was so consumed with my job. And I think when I got into the business, I got into it for the right reasons, clear eyes, full heart, can't lose. But then I was consumed by success and accolades and accomplishment and achievement.
Why do you think it took hold in you that way? I mean, what was it?
Because it's a high. It's a thrill. And I think just like any addiction, work can become an addiction. And work was my addiction of choice. Anytime I experienced any sort of trial, I would throw myself back into work. I had a miscarriage and then an emergency surgery, and 4 hours later, I went back to work. Like, that's just how I coped. Work was my coping mechanism. Mm-hmm. And it's what gave me a sense of fulfillment. Not my kids, not my husband, not my faith. It was work that was completely becoming an addiction, and I was finding my entire identity in it. And going back to The View, Jill, you raised, you know, they were throwing more things on my plate, but a lot of that was my own fault. And that was a situation where I should have said, I've got three kids. I can't work 7 days a week, even though I would go through stretches working 21 days straight without a day off. I should have said, I need some time, but I was consumed and addicted to my job and to success. And then I eventually burned out.
So if there's someone out there listening who works the way you do, maybe not by choice, maybe because they're a single mom and they've got kids that they have to support, and so they're working double jobs and 6 or 7 days a week, and it's not by choice,
right?
Or even if it is by choice, if you were to look at what you were doing, could there have been a way for you to integrate your faith and who you were at your core into working like that? If your identity was about being
the soul
you are, it could have worked.
It totally could have worked. But, you know, unfortunately, you look at the messages that we get from our society and they're all lean in. And one of the first questions you'll ask somebody, your name, What do you do for a living? We ask our kids from the time they're able to walk. What do you want to be when you grow up? What do you want to do? And so even subconsciously, we are trained and taught that our only value is our vocation, right? In this society that we live in. And I think it's probably much more compounded here in the United States than it is elsewhere. But absolutely, I could have pulled back but I didn't. And I leaned in and I pushed in and I worked hard and I thought my calling was my career, but I had it all wrong. My identity was just consumed in what I did, completely consumed. And then I just burned out. I really burned out. And
what were some of the signs and signals of that?
Well, you talk about my year of hell. Mm-hmm. I knew that. I think you can sense in your spirit when we were talking earlier, Jill and I, sometimes you know things are off kilter. Your body speaks to you. Your health might start breaking down. You may feel like a knot in your stomach. You don't have a peace about something. For me, I looked around and I was losing sight. All of my professional choices weren't aligning with my professed values, okay? I looked around and the relationships that I had boasted were important to me, my husband and my kids, and my church. All those relationships were failing. So everything was kind of falling apart around me, but I was so consumed with what I did. And I was then consumed with the fear, that fear of what people would think. What would they think? I'm at the height of my career. You know, the sky's the limit for me. What would people think? Will they think I'm a failure? Will they think that I can't hack it, that I'm weak? What are they going to think if I walk away? Because who does that? And one of my bosses even said, "You're crazy to give up an anchor seat. People don't do that. They work. People have worked their entire life to achieve what you've accomplished, and the sky's the limit for you." And so anyway, I bought into that for a little bit more. I let my fear drive me, and things continued to crumble. And I go through a tough season, Jill.
And you're afraid of that disappearance, what people would say and
everything. And yes, I'm afraid of it. But then I go through a season, within 7 months, I have five major events happen to me. I had a miscarriage with an emergency surgery. Then I freak accident. I'm getting ready to go live for GMA, and a pedestrian throws an apple 60 miles an hour at me. Oh, okay. Knocks me almost out. I have a concussion for 3 weeks. Freak accident. Like, who throws an apple at somebody so hard? The doctor or the police said
it was an 60 accident, miles it's an assault.
Hour. It was an assault. Yeah. An apple assault. I'm like, how weird can my life get, right?
Right, of course.
But had my face been turned slightly to the right, it would have been shattered. Hmm. So then the day I'm out of work for 3 weeks because of the concussion. The day I'm cleared to go back to work, I get in a head-on car crash. Then I get influenza followed by pneumonia. I was like, all right, God, I got it.
So
I think like you said, your body can give you signals that you need to slow down. People around you can have a sense in your spirit. For me, like, I had to go through that season. I had to be literally hit upside the head with an apple. I think God allowed that space to happen, that unfortunate space, but it finally got my attention. And I said, okay, I need to slow down. I got to pump the brakes. So that's when I decided to step away from my two dream jobs into this weird space, but I didn't know what I was walking into. My bosses said, okay, we'll support you, but what do you want to do? And I knew it was not a good career move. They told me it wasn't a good career move, that it would hurt my opportunities in the future. I accepted that. I said, I just need to get my life back. I still want to work here, but I want to work Monday through Friday. And I would love to launch a faith podcast because it's something that's really important to me and I'm passionate about it. And I don't think we talk about it, at least not from a mainstream platform, in the right manner. And they allowed me to do that. But then what happened was, the moment that I stepped away, I had this sense of loss and identity. I didn't know who I was outside of my job. And it was then that I realized my addiction. It was in that moment I thought, oh my gosh, my entire life I've professed to be this, you know, a Christian who doesn't get her worth from what she does. I've said, this doesn't define me. You know, I'm not defined by who I am. I'm not defined by what I do. I'm defined by who I am. And then when the rubber met the road and I actually stepped away, I was like, there was so much guilt because I realized I'd become the exact person that I professed I wouldn't become. I didn't know who I was outside of my job.
So how did you go about creating a new identity? Because Jill went through a similar situation after many years of working in one industry.
I was relieved of my job because the magazine industry was in collapse.
But it was a reinvention of, or rediscovering of who you were apart from the job.
Yes, and I definitely felt that identity disruption, although I think in retrospect what I realized is that the job wasn't a great expression of who I was on lots of levels. So it didn't feel as completely destabilizing.
Right.
Because there was something at the core that had never really been satisfied or expressed in my job.
Okay.
So I was able to say, well,
people would tell me, oh, this is what you were born to do, Paula.
People definitely told me I was, early in my career, my boss said to me, you're going to be an editor in chief. I was like, really? You think?
Mm-hmm.
But So I definitely heard that, but all along I'd thought to myself, I love this work, but the sort of show pony aspect of it is just not me.
Right. When we come back, we're going to get the secret sauce to how we rediscover our identity.
We have sauce here?
No, we're serving
you
sauce.
You have the sauce.
You
have the sauce, okay.
What if AI could help your business deliver mission-critical outcomes with speed? With IBM Consulting, your business can design, build, and scale trusted AI using Watson X and modernize the way you work to accelerate real impact. Let's create AI that transforms your business. Learn more at ibm.com/consulting. IBM. Let's create.
Your new home journey starts at Fisher Homes, where everything is red, white, and new. Explore exclusive summer savings and start your journey by selecting your ideal home site and your dream community. Choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans and bring your style to life at the Lifestyle Design Center. Are you looking for a quick move-in ready home instead? Fisher Homes has options for those, too. Fill out a form to connect with a new home advisor at fisherhomes.com to get started today before the sun sets on summer savings.
Hi, I'm Cindy Crawford, and I'm the founder of Meaningful Beauty. Well, I don't know about you, but, like, I never liked being told, oh, wow, you look so good for your age. Like, why even bother saying that? Why don't you just say you look great at any age, every age? That's what Meaningful Beauty is all about. We create products that make you feel confident in your skin at the age you are now. Meaningful Beauty. Beautiful skin at every age. Learn more at meaningfulbeauty.com.
We've been chatting with Paula Ferris about rediscovering our identity, especially when walking away from something that we thought did define who we are. So what was the process? How did you figure out who the real Paula is,
right?
And how did she stand up?
Well, I think it's will the real Paula please stand up?
Yes. Yeah.
We've all got that in our heads. I think, I had to go through that to figure, I had to fall flat on my face and I had to realize that I had it all wrong in order to realize what changes need to be made. But it was in that moment after when I walked away and I didn't know who I was anymore, that's when began a time of deep introspection, prayer, consulting with people, trusted people.
I really liked that component of your book. You recount some seminal conversations you had.
Right.
And it just sounded like you put yourself out on a limb and talked to people like Robin Roberts and Dan Harris, who you mentioned, and just laid it all out there, got really honest with them.
People that I'm very close to, that I trust with my heart, and I trust, not just with my heart, but, with my mind as well. And diverse people, Dan's an agnostic Buddhist, but I think there's things that you can learn from every single person. And, they were both able to really guide me through it. And it was just a time of deep reflection. And what I came to was that, we're all looking for a purpose in life. We're all looking for a calling. Unfortunately, and even in our synagogues and our churches, that's synonymous with career. So that's the issue right there, is we're taught that we have to find our calling and we have to find our purpose. And unfortunately, those are almost always intertwined with what we do, right? So I had to peel all of that back. And I really feel like I just had a word that we do have a calling. We have dual callings in our life. And I feel like my purpose has nothing to do, whereas before I may have said my purpose is to use my talents and gifts, and but it was more focused on what I did in career. Now I would say my purpose and my faith calling will never change. And that's just to love God and love people. And that's going to stay the same throughout my entire life. It has nothing to do with what I do for a living. Okay. That is my purpose on earth, to love God and love people. In my book, I call it my faith calling. Now I have a vocational calling, as you have a vocational calling, Lisa, and you have a vocational calling. That's going to change. Your vocational calling will change. And as long as you see your vocation for what it is, yes, I'm using my unique gifts and my unique talents, which we all have, but I'm using that as a vehicle. The vocation is just the vehicle by which you're going to fulfill your purpose, by which you'll love God and by which you'll love people. And so for me, it was just this small paradigm shift of knowing that, yes, who I am defines me, and who I am is I'm just here on this earth to love God and love people. I'm not here to be the best broadcaster. I'm here to love God and love people. And the vocation is just the way that I'm uniquely equipped to do that, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. And also in that space, giving myself the permission to allow my vocation to change, because it will change. I kind of liken it to a vine and a branch. Like, your vine is your purpose in this world, okay? The branch is the vocation. The vocation needs to stay connected to the vine. You have to always remember what you're doing and why you're doing it. I'm doing this not to achieve accolades and success, which I think are a byproduct. They'll be a byproduct, but I'm doing this because I'm loving God and loving people in this capacity. And so it was just, for me, a simple paradigm shift, but it made such a huge difference. And then giving myself the permission to branch out, giving myself the permission to not see myself so one-dimensionally, giving myself the permission to off-ramp, which I think 40% of women and mothers off-ramp. We see ourselves as one thing. You see yourself as a broadcaster. You see yourself as an author and an editor. But like peeling all of that back, what makes me a good broadcaster? What makes you a good nurse? What makes you a good editor? Looking at those skills and talents and saying, you know what? Those can translate to so many different capacities. Because I think we see ourselves as one thing. I said for so long, I don't know what I could do outside of broadcasting. Mm-hmm. And now I know I'm tenacious. I'm inquisitive. My nickname was Paula 20 Questions growing up. So I'm inherently curious and nosy. Those talents can manifest in so many different areas. So I think just limiting myself. I was limiting myself for so long.
You know, I'm really interested in this idea of a vocational calling and a faith calling. And I see the connection, the vine and the branch idea. But as somebody who job hunted for a discouragingly long period mm-hmm. of time, you know, what happens if you're not finding a branch that connects with your vine? Like, mm-hmm. it does feel, on some level, like it's a high bar. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like it's got to be, I need to make sure that my faith calling is satisfied, and that my life, that I'm leading my life in a way that's true to that. But I also need to find a vocational calling, and ideally they're somehow connected.
They are connected. Yeah. I did a really fascinating interview with a government guy, and I write about him in the book. His name is David Shedd, and he was the director of national intelligence after 9/11. So he had, I think, 18 different agencies reporting to him. And I wanted to interview him because I saw in his bio that he was called to go into government. And again, that word calling, like, we just throw it around all the time. And it's always connected with career, right? So I asked him, I said, okay, I've said I feel called to go here and I've been called to do this, but I don't know how to articulate what that even means. And he gave me, he shed some light on it, and it was one of those aha moments for me. He said, you know, you're being vocationally called to do something with three things. One, are you good at it? Two, do you love it? And three, do other people in your life that are trusted recognize that you're good at it and you love it? It's not enough to just be good at it. It's not enough just to love it. Like, for instance, my son, one of my children, is so good at golf. It's his gifting. And we notice it and recognize it. He doesn't love it. Okay? So it has to be those three things. What are you good at? What are you curious about? Okay? Mm-hmm. So what are you curious about? And then what do other people, trusted people in your life, notice that you're good at and you're curious about? Does that make sense?
Yes, it totally does.
And I think just looking back, I wasn't able to put those pieces together, but then in hindsight, okay, this is what made me a good broadcaster. I'm curious. I love to ask questions. And my high school teacher and my college professors were continually encouraging me in that space. Mm-hmm. So when I went back to look at it, I'm like, oh, that's like the three-step formula to vocational calling in my mind. Are you good at it? Are you curious about it? And do other people recognize that you're good and curious about it?
How do you get your life calling? Or I forget, what do you call it?
You can call it your faith calling
your
or your
faith
purpose.
Calling. Okay.
You say call it your purpose.
So what if your vocational calling or choice or where you've ended up, maybe mm-hmm. you weren't called to it, you're good at it, people recognize you're good at it and you love it. Say you're a day trader, you know, mm-hmm. making, or a hedge fund manager. You're not particularly making the world a better place. You're making a lot of money.
But you can make the world a better place with your money. And I think that we're all each equipped and capacitated in different areas too. You can use your money for good.
Mm, yeah.
Is that
so?
What you're
but no, I was saying your purpose or your faith calling mm-hmm. doesn't necessarily merge with your vocational calling. You have to do it outside of your vocational calling. Because if you're working any job,
right.
the majority of jobs aren't necessarily, you know, transforming the world.
Right.
You're working at a department store selling dresses.
So you're saying it's out of necessity.
Correct.
It's not out of love.
Correct. So
mm-hmm.
is there a way to have parallel tracks? Does everyone have to be, you know, like curing coronavirus? I mean,
no.
Right. So
no.
If what you're doing isn't the most laudatory of professions, mm-hmm. is there a way to have a parallel track for your faith calling so that it's not necessarily your day job?
No, I see what you're saying. And I think that's where the paradigm shift has to happen too. Like, yes, I'm at a point now where I don't get my identity from what I do anymore. My identity and my only purpose on this earth is to love God and love people. The vocation is the way that I do it. So whether you're a desk clerk or whether you're working at Macy's, that is your vehicle, and that's your conduit by which you're going to fulfill your purpose.
So you just people and God within whatever job you're doing.
And that's what you have to remember. And if you're not a person of faith, like I write about that too, like Dan Harris, who is my dear friend, his faith calling or his purpose might just be to be a kind person and to treat people with respect. So you remember whatever capacity you're in whatever vocation you're in, that's just an opportunity for you. You've been uniquely placed in that position to, as Dan would say, be kind to people and to be respectful of people. It's not so much about what you do anymore. It's about who you're doing it for, why you're doing it. And so we've got to get the emphasis off of what we do and our identity and everything focused on what we do and peel back the layers. And I have stopped asking my children the question, what do you want to be when you grow up? Because I'm feeding that message, and I'm telling them, even subconsciously and even consciously, your only value is your vocation. Your only worth, child, is what you do. But that's, we have to stop asking that question. We have to peel back the layers and focus more on who we are and why we're here, and not so much on what we do. But unfortunately, you know, it's going to take a lot of work because it's ingrained in our society. It's part of our, it's part of our nomenclature. It's part of our language. It's part of our expression. What do you do? Hi, I'm so-and-so. What do you do?
You know, can you imagine if we all went to cocktail parties and said to each other, hi, I'm Jill.
That's
and you said, I'm Paul. And I mm-hmm. said, so who are you really? Like what?
Try to think about what's at the core
of you?
If you had to introduce yourself outside of what you did, how would you describe yourself? If you're interested, I'm Jill.
I'm also a super curious person. See, and I can't wait to get to know you because that's how I feel about people.
No, that's amazing, though. And, you know, when my dad passed, it said nothing about what he did on his gravestone. It said that he was a loving father and a loving jadu, which is Arabic for grandfather and husband. And that really stuck with me. It put everything in perspective. It's not about what we do so much. Yes, it's great to love what you do and to kind of, you know, be in your sweet spot. But just remember, that's just the way that you're going to love people.
Such good advice. Thank you so much for sharing it with us.
We've
loved having you on.
Thank you. Thank you.
This has been so nice. So, everybody.
Are we going to solve all the world's problems?
I mean, right now.
Right now.
Today.
I think we kind of did. I think we did.
I think the world is solved. Love each other. Love God.
your
definition of God.
Mm-hmm.
So now, listener, all you have to do is check out Paula's wonderful podcast, Journeys of Faith, and her new book, which is Called Out, Why I Traded Two Dream Jobs for a Life of True Calling. You can also check her out on Instagram at Paula Ferris.
The Road to Somewhere is recorded in New York City. Make sure you share, subscribe, rate, and review us. And let us hear from you. Where are you on your journey? Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at Pod to Somewhere. Email us at roadtosomewhere@iheartmedia.com. Special thanks to our producer, Alicia Haywood. Thanks for joining us on The Road to Somewhere, available on the iHeartRadio app, on Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Your new home journey starts at Fisher Homes, where everything is red, white, and new. Explore exclusive summer savings and start your journey by selecting your ideal home site and your dream community. Choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans and bring your style to life at the Lifestyle Design Center. Are you looking for a quick move-in ready home instead? Fisher Homes has options for those too. Fill out a form to connect with a new home advisor at fisherhomes.com to get started today before the sun sets on summer savings.
You know that feeling when you walk into your home, take a deep breath, and feel new? Well, that's what it's like to use Clorox Scentiva. Because Clorox Scentiva smells like coconut, cleans like Clorox, and feels like energy. It'll elevate any cleaning routine to not just clean, but also make every room smell like a tropical coconut getaway. Discover how Clorox Scentiva's powerful clean and refreshing scents can transform your space. Get yours in coconut or other fabulous scents at a nearby retail store.
We went from normal life, healthy child, to acute lymphoblastic leukemia, or B-cell ALL. The St. Jude team came up to get CJ via ambulance. Shortly after that, I noticed a rainbow. It meant that there was hope. We were driving into hope. To have hope is to have your child healthy, and we have that because of St. Jude.
You can help kids fight childhood cancer. Please become a St. Jude Partner in Hope today by visiting musicgives.org.